Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome, everybody. I am Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, listening each and every weekend. We're on a number of different stations across the Southwest, starting in Southern California, actually up in Tahoe, Las Vegas, too, and down to Albuquerque, New Mexico. We are trying to add some stations, get more people informed. The company that I work for, Malibu Funding, they're in 13 different states. In those states, we usually bring people from those states on the show about once every 2 or 3 months. What we try to do is bring information about what's going on in other states, other areas that you might want to live or buy a house or get a mortgage. And the reason that that's good information for you is to get a comparison. So much of what real estate is, and I always say it's local, what you have locally, what's your inventory locally, who you're dealing with locally, what are the rates locally, what kind of programs are you dealing with locally, certainly if you're urban or city or country. All of these things take into account what lender you go to and what programs that you're available to you and what you're going to do to apply for those certain things. So I appreciate you, again, listening to the show each and every week to try to get something from it that you, too, can use when you want to go out there and either buy a home, refinance a current home, or maybe scale down where you're living, move someplace else, maybe step up and buy something else, looking for a bigger house, maybe decide to stay where you are and add on, all those things. Now, this time of year, we try to bring on some decorators, some people in that end of the business. We're still working on that. We just couldn't connect this week. But they give us information on trends in that end of the business. If you're going to fix up your home and sell it, for instance, you want to know that what you're fixing up and selling is, you know, sellable if that's what you're particular. I mean, you don't want to build a huge addition to your house if the neighborhood doesn't support that huge addition and the price that you spend on building that addition really doesn't translate into sales price once you sell the property. You obviously want to have square footage that maybe is a little bit more than other people in your neighborhood. You want to have, you know, if there are pools in your neighborhood, maybe consider pool. But a lot of neighborhoods, pools aren't the best thing to invest your money in if you're fixing it up. Certainly a new paint, just painted my house, looks great. We did buy some additional new furniture, which was, you know, we're not selling our house, but in terms of what the market was bearing, I live in a beach community, so if the house kind of looks beachy, well, That's a good thing. If you are trying to sell, you don't want to have a traditional English-style Tudor home on the beach in Malibu, California. It's not going to work. Although, to be honest with you, there is a house out there that is like that. No accounting for taste, but then again, if you're trying to sell, you want to broaden this, the scope of the sale of your house to the largest possible market. So you want to make sure that the end of, you know, design and building and the type of things that you do to your house when you fix it up, if you're going to sell, is meeting with current trends and what's going on in the marketplace. And so next week, I hope to have a couple of people on to talk about that. Okay, let's get to a couple of things. There's a section that I wanted to try out, newer section, just things that just irritate me in the world and that does actually affect attitudes about housing, about getting a mortgage, about things that just don't make sense to me. And maybe if they make sense to you, great. And maybe if it makes you cranky, you can always get a hold of me. I'm all over the internet, and certainly this particular radio show, you can always call the station and say, wow, that guy was great, or, oh, that guy's the worst thing ever. Okay, one of the things that makes me crazy is during COVID, we had protocols to see houses. If you wanted to go out and see a house, if you wanted to have your agent schedule an appointment, there were protocols. There were, okay, you had to have half-hour segments. You had to have the house free of anybody else. Everybody wore a mask. Usually the homeowner would delegate the agent to go in after each showing and, you know, wipe down those areas that got touched during the inspection. You know, someone's going to open the fridge. Of course, everybody opens the fridge. Everybody opens the closets. Everybody, you know, checks the garage. These are just things. So you go around, you wipe it down. It was a clear-cut protocol of what we had to do, and everybody was on board with it. Now, It's a hodgepodge out there, whether you are in a particular county or town or state which has certain protocols. Other states, counties, towns have different protocols. So because I work for a company that's in multiple states, we have different procedures and policies when it comes to that. Now, why it makes a difference in the mortgages? Because the appraisal that needs to get done on any property that is getting that you're doing a purchase on or that you're doing a refinance is, they have their protocols too. Now, normally it's set by what the realtors are doing in showing the property if it's for sale. If it's a refi, there are a number of other ways that they can handle it. But on a sale, the appraiser has to and usually follows the protocols set by the realtors. For instance, they call the listing agent and say, look, I need to see this house. We're appraising it for the loan of the buyer. And the listing agent goes, okay, come on over at this date. And well, because it is the way it is, appraisers do not know how to and what to do. So it requires now that each appraisal management company have their own policies and procedures in order to get appraisals done, i.e., the appraiser will do this, the appraiser will not do this. And it's created some problems. We have now a backlog in a lot of areas in the United States, especially in Southern California, New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, Northern California, any of the Washington, Oregon areas, certainly on the West Coast. Appraisers are taking forever to get an appraisal done. Now, you may have an appraiser friend that can do it, but because we have arm's length since Dodd-Frank, you have to now go through the AMCs. The AMCs dictate policy about how showings are done to the appraiser because it's a hodgepodge of what's going on out there in the marketplace. Anyway, this is one of the things that's driving me crazy. And obviously, if we had more people who would voluntarily go and get the vaccine, we could be out of this hodgepodge. And I look at it strictly as a way by which appraisals would be done more easily, there wouldn't be as much confusion, and we could get to the heart of the matter, which is selling that house to the buyer who just wants to get a loan. Okay, rates. Let's talk rates. 2.86 is the 30-year fixed rate right now. 2.27 is the 15-year. 2.50 is FHA. 3.03 is the jumbo, and 2.38 is the 5-1 ARM. The 10-year yield is at 1.27. It was down to 1.19, almost below 1.1 at one point last week during trading session. We have stabilized right around the 1.3 area, which is a little bit lower than the 1.53 it was for a while, and certainly much lower than 1.77 a couple of months ago. Now, why is this, and is this a good thing, and what's happening to the marketplace, which dictates the 10-year? It's all based on COVID, right? And the COVID says the Fed will continue to purchase mortgage-backed securities and continue to purchase treasuries. So artificially keeping the rates to where they are, the Fed has concluded that, yes, it's kind of a conundrum here, i.e. you want rates low in order to stimulate the market. However, because rates are low, you have an overstimulated buyer's market, thus driving the price up. Right. So if you have too many buyers and not enough prices and not enough properties to sell, that's called supply and demand. Everybody knows the supply and demand, right? So that's one of the reasons why prices are driven up. The other one, of course, is that they aren't building enough houses. That's a separate deal in its entirety. We talked about that quite a bit. So what does the Fed do? Well, how and when does it taper? And when, and tapering means ending or slowing down the purchases. It currently, in the combined amount, is about $120 billion a month. Let's say they cut it down in half to $60 billion a month. Would that slow the real estate rise in prices? The answer is we don't know. But what it would do is it would eliminate a lot of buyers who right now can afford it. Why? Because that would set in motion a more traditional way to look at mortgage product, maybe driving up the 10-year yield, which again would drive up mortgage interest rates. This is what normally happens. Anyway, we're at the end of the section here. Appreciate you calling in, and obviously want to seek all the interest that we can in the show. Give us a call, email me, Let's see. I don't have an email. Jeff@MalibuFunding.net. That's my email. Thank you very much. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@MalibuFunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, listening to the show. If you do watch the show, hey, we're on YouTube, and we've got me every day, every week. Either we're on LinkedIn, Facebook, during our weekly show called The Mortgage Minute, or we're on the weekends, and we shoot this and put it up on YouTube. It's called Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice. We talk about trends in the marketplace, what's happening with products, people, places, and things kind of thing. And we're also on a bunch of different podcasts. Daryl, you have a list of those podcasts for us?
I sure do, Jeff. We've got Apple Podcasts, Google Music Play, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartMedia, Radio.com, of course, YouTube you mentioned, and podclips.io.
Excellent. And also, you can go to themortgagevoice.com. You can see different segments of the show. This particular interview coming up, you can see there in about a week. So, okay. Bringing to us more information about what's going on in Vegas with her life and also some of the things that are exciting coming up maybe in the future, Jeanti Chun joins us. She is the star of A&E's Marrying Millions, if you've seen it. Is that right?
Lifetime.
It's Lifetime. Why do I always go A&E? I know it's Lifetime. And I said to myself, don't screw this up. Lifetimes. Star of Lifetime.
A&E too, then. That'd be wonderful.
Oh, man, absolutely. Let's spread the love around. Anyway, how's the show going? What's happening with it? And are you back in production soon?
Oh, for the show? No, not yet. It's still up in the air for season 3. We're not sure what's going to happen. We don't even know if we'll have a season 3, so I don't know. So we'll just wait and see.
Well, if you're out there and you've seen the show, you got to call into the producers right now and say, I demand my, Jeanti fix, Marrying Millions. Absolutely.
Marrying Millions. I demand Jeanti. Marrying Millions.
Exactly. It should just be your show anyway. I mean, that's the way I look at it. You know? Now, Jeanti has, I know you've been busy in other aspects of your career, certainly what's happening in the real estate market in Las Vegas since COVID shut down and then opening up and now I guess shut down again. I'm a little confused. What's happening?
Well, it's not shut down. I think the governor just is mandating the mask again, for all indoors or whatever. You're going to go indoors to all the businesses and stuff. So it's just and it's starting on the 30th. So I think just a mask mandate and nothing shutting down.
Well, that's good. I mean, obviously, people, when they get fired up with a few drinks in them, they're not going to want to wear those masks, so I don't know how that's going to work. And how do you drink with a mask on anyway? But
Well, when you're drinking and eating, of course you can have it off.
I see.
It doesn't make any sense.
I'm just thinking of on the floor if you're at the roulette table and, you have a couple of cocktails. How's that going to work? I don't know. It's all confusing to me in Vegas, especially.
Oh, yes. No, they do the same thing. At the table, you'll still have to wear your mask if you're sitting there and playing. You can only take it off if you're going to have a drink, and you're drinking it. Once your drink is out of your mouth, you need to put the mask back on.
Okay, you got a couple of yahoos from Iowa in there, a couple of farm boys. It's not going to work.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I'm just retarded.
Yeah, I know. Okay, well, anyway, Vegas is up, it's running, and that's a good thing. What's happening in the real estate market? Is it still on fire as it has been, demand high and inventory low?
Absolutely. Exactly what you said. It's still there. Now, I think there's maybe slightly a little bit more inventory,
Right.
But we're still at only 2.5 months of inventory, so it's still not a lot. So before, offers were getting, 10 to 20 the first, couple of days. Now, and it depends on the property, obviously, but now it's, 4, 5, 6, less than 10, as opposed to 20 and 30. It's just madness. It's just insane still.
How are you handling when obviously it's easier if it's 4 or 5 than 20 buyers when they get to you and they get discouraged if they don't get a property, they don't get 2 properties and they want to just quit the market. Do you see that happening or how do you handle that?
Sure. Okay. So I represent both sides,
right,
buyer and seller, and I have my sellers, which I, what I do with the listings is I say, look, let's put a time frame on here, you know, 1 week only, whatever, 2 weeks, whatever we think, and say we have a deadline for the offer. Deadline for offer this day, please put it all in by this time, this day. And then we cut it off from there, you know. So
right,
you limit the amount of offers coming in. So that's what I've been doing. That's been successful for me for my listings. And then on the buyer side, you know, unfortunately, sometimes we do have to make several offers, you know,
yeah,
on several different properties because we're getting beat out by other, you know, offers. So I don't like doing that specifically as an agent. I really don't like that, and I don't advise a lot of clients to do that because sometimes you can win two or three bids, right?
Right.
And then you have to go back and you have to tell that seller, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I can't move forward with this. And then they get a little upset. I mean, I would. I do on the seller side, too. It's like, God darn it, you know.
Yeah. No, I know.
So now we go to the backup offer. But it's been good. I mean, even those ones where we've had to let go or we've had to cancel, escrow, whatever, you know, there's backup offers that's willing to get into contract right away. So.
Financing. What are you seeing from financing? FHA, not so much. Cash offers. What's going on?
Oh, FHA, forget about it.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know,
nobody wants to wait. Yeah.
If you don't have the funds to cover, I mean, you're going to have to do conventional at least, right?
Right.
But even with that, you have to have extra funds because people are offering, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000
right,
dollars above appraised value. Or what would be appraised value, and of course we don't know that until you cross that bridge with the seller.
Now,
the appraisal.
Now, who do you work for? Realty One out there. Who do you work for?
Realty One Group. Yes.
Right, right, and that's kind of the biggest out there, or one of the biggest out there. Do you find that brand name realtor companies have an edge over? Like in an offer situation, if you're making it and you're coming from a big brand name company rather than Joe's Realty down the street, do you think you have an advantage for your buyers? Maybe not.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's about the numbers.
Right.
And Mr. Seller doesn't care, you know, where it comes from as long as, you know, they'll get the maximum amount of money that they're asking for over, right? So they
yeah,
don't really care. Now, the good thing about being with a large company is you have a lot of network, you know, so you know, you may know more people as far as agents and
oh, you
know,
yeah,
all that stuff. So there could be a little advantage, I suppose, when you've worked with agents before, a slight advantage where you can actually call them and talk to them and feel them out a little bit better than another agent that, you know, you don't know.
Now, that's interesting. Do you see that there's more agents in Vegas today than there were like a year ago, or do you think it's actually less?
Compared to a year ago, I think there might be slightly more.
I see.
We're talking about maybe just, you know, a couple of thousand or something like that, I think.
Right.
Not significantly more.
Right, and in terms of individual investors running around town, I know when I'm out there, I always notice that there's always a segment of the market that really aren't agents per se, but they represent investors, so quote unquote. So they are finding properties, and the investors are coming in. Do you see that as a way by which some of the market is?
I do. There's still a lot of investors that have cash.
Right.
You know,
yep,
which is always better than anything else. But the problem with investors is we want a deal. And in this market right now, forget about it. I mean, unless it's from, you know, person to person or, you know, owner for sale by owner or something where they're getting in and, you know, they're kind of manipulating, you know, the
right,
owner to get that deal somehow. There's no way. Even and that, you know, I'm an investor, and
yes, you are.
I have clients that are investors too, and I'm like, here's the property, but I'm sorry, we're not going to lowball. I mean, even offering, you know, the market value of the list price isn't going to get it. So as an investor, I don't see a lot of investors making a lot of moves. I mean, there are some that get lucky, you know, with certain owners, with certain sellers, some, but not a lot at all.
Okay, we're up against it. Shout out your phone number, way for people to get in touch with you, especially because you're not only a terrific person, but a great loan officer, kind of real estate agent. Maybe not loan officer, but real estate agent, absolutely.
Not loan officer, yeah.
No.
Real estate agent.
Well, you know financing, that's why I said it.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Right.
I do know all aspects of real estate.
Right.
Jean-Pierre Chun Realty One Group in Las Vegas. My number is 702-467-3131. Easy breezy.
Easy breezy. Okay, very good. Excellent. Thank you, John T. Appreciate you calling and being on the show today. Thanks a lot.
All right,
Rudy.
Thank you.
Sure, and I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, for listening each and every week, coming to the show with the answers that we sometimes have. A lot of times I don't have any answers, but the guests that we bring on the show do, and they are experts in what they do and what they can bring to you, whether they're talking about programs, a refinance or purchase, whether they're talking about how to decorate your house or maybe some fix-up that you need in order to get your house prepped for selling. Guy that we're going to bring on the show now, Mitch McClellan, who is the, are you the general manager over there, Mitch?
That would be me, yes.
Yes, exactly, at KMET, which is a radio station that we broadcast on, and I like having him on because pulse to the, finger to the pulse of what's going on in the neighborhood. First off, Mitch, how are you?
Good. Been a while since we talked, but great to be back.
And thank you very much once again for doing this. I know your day is very busy, as a lot of people are. What do you see as business coming back after the pandemic, or is it coming back?
Oh, no, I think it's coming back. As far as our business radio, talk and news radio, we did a lot better than a lot of people did, to be honest. And I know people with music stations that probably lost 40% or 50%
right.
of their billing. It was kind of the opposite for us. I think, you know, with the pandemic and everything, we actually gained listeners, and the people that were listening actually listened longer. I mean, we've had people calling right and left looking for programs and advertising. So I hate to make the work anything good out of a bad situation, but it for us, it's actually turned out pretty well.
What do you see as a programming aspect? Are there any differences between pre-pandemic and post-pandemic or during the pandemic? Have you changed the focus? Is some of the shows that you're doing different, meaning do they take on more of a political spin because we had so much going on last year?
You know, we actually have gotten, I guess, not by design. It's basically what people have approached us wanting to do, the program producers and hosts, but I think we're probably less political now than we were before. And you know, as far as the whole, you know, the mask thing and then
yep.
facts,
yep.
you know, nobody's, you know, there was always going to be two sides to both of those. But
right.
We just had, it seems like, you know, the market is growing. The big thing I will tell you, Jeff, is during the pandemic, a lot of people weren't going to work. So they weren't in their cars with the radio on in the morning on the way to work or in the afternoon coming back. And our online listening actually went up with our app and streaming, but they actually listened longer when they were at home. So I think people were like working out of their home office and they wanted some company or something familiar.
And that's interesting. Do you think that they're doing it via the old transistor radio, or are they just streaming online?
I think it's both. I mean, obviously, if they're in the car, it's still the radio. But
sure.
I mean, I know, you know, myself, when I'm at home, you know, I can stream it on my phone if I want to. But if I put it through my stereo system, it's, you know, it's in stereo speakers in every room. So I think it just depends. You know, if you're on the road, if you're walking around or out somewhere, obviously the streaming and the apps make it a lot more portable now.
Tell us, where is your station, what area you cover, a little bit demographically about the type of people that listen to your station. I've been on your station now for several years, and I love the coverage, love the content that you bring to the audience. Just give us an idea of who they are.
We are located in the Inland Empire. We're actually on the east end of the Inland Empire. If you know where Beaumont is,
yep.
It's a little bit up the hill from Redlands. We're kind of halfway between Riverside, San Bernardino on one side and Palm Springs on the other. It has been one of the fastest growing areas of the state for a while, and that is probably because there's still available land,
right.
and we are seeing building like mad for single family housing. And I can tell you, we work with the school districts on a number of projects out here. The example, Beaumont High School is there's one high school for the entire town. That campus was built for approximately 2,000 students. They have annexed property next to the current campus, and they are going to build that campus out for what eventually will be 5,000 students when they get done. So they're still room to build, and they are building as fast as they can out here.
Radio versus TV versus online advertising. What are you telling people about what's happening? Because, you know, the old adage, you know, radio is dead. I've been hearing that for 20 years, and I still disagree with it. But where do you see your particular advertising base and how you reach your people fitting into the overall landscape, especially with so many of the younger people going exclusively online?
Well, I would tell you, I don't want to run down TV, but I will tell you, I'm sure everybody knows that people are cutting the cord like mad, whether it's cable or satellite or anything. They're just watching or consuming media differently now than they did 10 or 20 years ago.
Yep.
As far as we're concerned, if you are working with our station, you are getting over-the-air radio, which we always offered, but you are also getting online streaming. You're getting streaming on our mobile apps for iPhone or Android. Your shows are podcasts, so it's on demand 24/7 on our website. And we also have a video component, KMET TV, so a lot of folks, when they do their show, there's also a video streaming portion, which is great because they can take part of that video, use it on their own website, or put it up on YouTube or whatever they want to do.
Expertise in doing that exact thing, media, marketing, the radio station, do you help your clients when they come to you if they have a show and they want to put it on?
Oh, definitely. That's all part of it. You know, obviously, if somebody's going to spend money with us, we want it to be a long-term relationship. And we've been really fortunate. You know, I would say we're probably choosier. We don't like to turn money down, but we're probably a little more choosy as far as who we want to work with. We know the audience. It's, you know, 25 to 54 or 35 to 64. So it's an audience with discretionary income, but we've kind of learned what they like and what they're not really interested in. So if we've got somebody on the air, I mean, you think you're a good example. You know, you and I have worked together long enough to know our audience wants to hear what you have to say and vice versa.
Right, and I appreciate that. And where do you see the station heading? What kind of further reach are you looking for, or are you happy where you are?
Never happy. I think we've got, you know, we went from having one AM station to having seven different platforms now. You factor in radio. We now have an FM translator that's expanded our reach. So we've got AM and FM, that's two. We've got audio streaming, that's three. We've got the mobile apps, that's four. We've got video, that's five. And we've got the podcasting. So basically we've got six different platforms where we only had one before.
Yeah, you know, I think most media now is, and that's what you call it, right? Because it's mixed. You have all different ways by which content can get delivered. And I guess all these buzzwords that we talk about really define where the audience wants to go. It's not as if you woke up one day and said, I want to do this. You're saying, well, that's where content is being delivered, so we better get on board. Is that more the way you looked at it, or are you more for foresight?
No, I would agree with that. You know, it's like you said, Everybody says radio is dead, and it's not. I mean, I can show you survey after survey. It's still the most listened to medium in the country over TV or podcasting or streaming or anything else. But at the end of the day, content is king, and anybody that's got good content is going to be successful no matter what platform they're on.
Okay, excellent. Listen, we've come almost to the end. I'd like people who are interested in broadcasting like this show to be able to reach you, get a hold of you, and talk to you maybe about doing something similar. Could you let people know how to do that?
Yes. Our sales and marketing director, Bill Bruns, who I know you know, would be a great place to start. I would tell people go to our website, which is KMET1490AM.com, and you'll see everything you need to know about the station, including programming lineup, coverage maps, demographic info. There's also a contact button on there where you can email Bill or have him get in touch with you, and you can take a look at the shows that are already on the air and see who you might be working with.
Matt, thank you very much for coming on the show, doing the interview. I really appreciate it, and I'm sorry Bill couldn't make it either. I understand has a little dental appointment, which I dread. So thank you very much for coming and taking his place. Appreciate
great
it.
Great to talk to you, Jeff.
Great.
Continued success.
Thank
we
you.
We appreciate working with you, and most weeks I listen one way or another, whether it's not live or I listen on the podcast one way or the other.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on, and we'll talk soon, and thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
That's Mitch McClellan from KMET. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@MalibuFunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, and I am your voice in the mortgage industry. Yes, I am. Been doing it for 8 years on the radio, bringing you guests, people who know more than I do, which is almost everybody in the business. I've got experience, but knowledge is really about processes, about pricing, about being able to look at a person's income and say, you qualify for this. That takes real expertise. And as a result of that, I always ask guests to come on the show to explain it. And one of the people that I always go to is Jennifer Conrad, who is a loan officer as well as a terrific processor, been working for the company that I work for, Malibu Funding, for a number of years, but is from Chicago, Illinois, and also has family almost everywhere. So she's very used to all kinds of scenarios everywhere. Jennifer, how are you?
You're doing great, Jeff. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show. Okay, off air, we're talking, and just to let the audience know, we're talking about pricing and how to deal with certain clients, especially when their expectations are led in one way and the reality of the numbers is something else. How do you handle something like that?
I think I usually try to approach it from a standpoint of giving them an option. I will compare different lenders and, you know, let them know based upon different parameters, your credit score, how much you're putting down, where you're purchasing. What kind of incentives I have based upon, you know, what state, county, you know, to that nature, you know, this is what I have to offer. I can't work miracles, but I can only present what I have. And then I also let them know that, you know, if they're trying to shop me around for other people, you have to consider the service.
Right.
With a lot of other people, you have to sort of hand your loan to one person and then they pass it off to someone else. And with me, it's sort of a one-stop shop. I mean, I'm able to help you find the right program, you know, secure the best rate for you, and then I'm going to walk you through your whole process from beginning to end. So when you get done with me, the next thing is you're going to be sitting at the closing table ready to sign.
Yeah, I think that's the most important part is that your experience based on not only being a terrific loan officer, but, you know, your years of processing thousands of files, being able to spot something right away that's going to be a problem with a lender that you can take care of up front rather than wait till the end and hope nobody notices, which, of course, is the most naive thing. That's 2004 thinking. We don't do that anymore.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I usually make sure that, you know, I try to educate borrowers, you know, a great deal before we even get started. And you're correct, because I've been doing it so long, I try to make sure I get as much information as I can before we even get to a point of submitting it to the underwriter so that we can send files in as clean as possible. And, you know, hopefully to get approval, but don't have, you know, quite as many conditions. So, you know, I'm very fortunate in that aspect, so that even on the processing side, the loan officers who have been working with me a while, they tend to want to continue to work with me because they know I'm going to scrub those files and we're going to, you know, have a high success rate of what we get close.
Do you see any issues with either gender or different ways people talk to you know, females in the business versus males in the business? Now, I ask that reasonably. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
And I bring that up because, one, it's awful. We all have to deal with it. But in an industry which is, you know, usually dominated by a lot of guys, right? I mean, the mortgage industry, a lot of guys in it. But some of the best loan officers in the business are obviously female, and you qualify for that too. How do you handle a client who obviously needs your help but has somewhat of an attitude when they're talking to you?
First thing is I try to make sure I don't take it personally. because I've been doing it so long. I put myself through college and feel it, put myself through college doing mortgages. I just don't internalize it. I already know what type of service I provided. My track record speaks for itself. So when I am talking to someone and I can sense that there's an issue, I just try to stay on course in regards to the service that I can provide and everything that they need. So I find that if I make sure that I, you know, have all of my ducks in a row and I make sure I have all of my information as accurate as possible, and that I'm putting them in a situation where I'm giving them more information than what they expected that they were going to get, that at some point they stop focusing on whether or not, you know, I'm male or female,
right,
and focus on the service that I can provide for them. I mean, but to be honest with you, it's kind of been the same thing in the past dealing with loan officers.
Yep.
And a lot of times people get in their mind that you started just a paper pusher until people realize that you're an asset that they need to have. So I've never had any borrowers, you know, purchase who had issues and said, you know what, I wish I never went with you. As a matter of fact, they've referred other people to me. And even if they decided they wanted to refinance, you know, they will reach out and say, hey, you know, are you still in the business? Are you doing stuff? Like, absolutely. You know, so I find that to be, you know, definitely a compliment and a blessing to be able to be in that situation. You know, and it's just about, like I said, making sure that I don't get involved with whatever it is that they may have going on. If it's, you know, a bad day, and so therefore they kind of size up who they think I am until, you know, I'm like, hey, let's just get this job done and get you in your home.
Yeah, I think that having a great attitude is the only way to approach any problem. But the waste of time that so much of this stuff is just, you know, you either know your stuff or you don't know your stuff. And in your case, you do. And so anybody that would take advantage of that is going to find themselves in a position to close their loan faster and be happier with the service. And I think that's the most overreaching aspect of any loan officer, any job. As long as you're doing your job, and you're doing your job so much that the customer is happy, then what else is there in a transaction?
I don't think that's it. That's all you can do. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and a lot of times people don't even realize how much they may need your service. I think because, you know, when you think about it, buying a home is the most stressful purchase you're going to ever make. So a lot of people come in with an attitude that they're already expecting to have issues with the person who's working on their mortgage, or they're thinking you're going to try to, you know, rake them across the coals. And so I consider the fact that this is something I do every day, and this is not something that they do every day. So
right.
Then that means I have to look at it from a standpoint of, you know, you may be emotional, you may be in this place, but it's my job just to try to make sure I get you to the finish line. You know, and get you to the finish line happy. So that's it.
Okay. Describe some of the programs that you see are not popular, but I guess outside of the conventional 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, where the rates are just unbelievable. I mean, can you believe these rates?
Right, absolutely.
But what do you see as...
I'm seeing a lot of bank statement programs come
okay.
down. So, I mean, 12-month bank statements, 24-month bank statements, we're talking business and personal. But the other thing is that we have one lender that allows us to even be able to do a 3-month bank statement program. And, I mean, with that, you know, you can have someone who has a business and maybe, you know, the beginning quarter or first quarter or whatever, you know, they're super, super strong. And maybe the second quarter is not quite as strong. And
right.
this is a continuation of how things have been, you know, in years past. And so now we're in a situation where, you know, we can take 3 months, average that, and it can allow people to be able to qualify for mortgages they probably normally wouldn't be able to. And, I mean, even with that, you're still talking about pretty competitive rates in the 30-year fixed loan.
No.
And that can be, you know, an owner-occupied loan.
Do you think that's a result, the three-month product is a result of COVID, or is it just a result of the way the market's headed?
I think it's a result of the market.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, there are some people who, you know, had a difficult time, obviously, with COVID, and there are some business owners that actually fell during this time.
Right.
But a lot of it could just be, you know, depending on the nature of a person's business, you know, how things may go, that's just a trend for them each year. And in a lot of cases, if they had to get a regular conforming, you know, they wouldn't have an option because we're going to do a 2-year average. So to be in a situation where, you know, maybe you have a pattern of it, or even, you know, if you just had a rough year, but you know that you have, you know, income that's consistently coming in, but maybe this particular quarter is better than maybe last quarter, then it gives you an opportunity to still be able to purchase a home.
Excellent information. Listen, we've come up against it. Can you let people know how they can get in touch with you, especially since you do loans all over the place?
Absolutely. My number is 773-593-6831.
And this is Jennifer Conrad. She works for Malibu Funding. Jennifer, thanks very much. Really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff. I really appreciate it.
Excellent. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, listening to the show each and every week. We bring guests to the show that try to describe what's happening in the market, either locally or nationally, and other guests which also give us a description of what their particular expertise is to help you either fix up your house or, you know, decide when to get on. Obviously, we talk to real estate agents, mostly loan officers, processors, people or account executives, the different programs, the different banks. We get a lot of calls on requests for information. Now, if you want information on what we have each and every show, we are putting the guests on each show on our website in their own little section with their own little ability to hear what they said on that show. Each one of those sections is about 8 or 9 minutes long. And if you go to themortgagevoice.com, you will hear and see all of those particular people. So if you hear somebody you like on the show and you want to hear what they have to say more, go to themortgagevoice.com. It usually takes 2 or 3 days, maybe a week, to get the particular interview up, but it will be there archived for you, and pictures of the guests. So contacting them about the programs that you want to hear about, that's always a good way. Programs are always the best way to talk to borrowers because they're always looking for, well, my situation is this. And when they hear their situation from an account executive about a program they have, bingo, they want to talk to them right away. Most of the borrowers who are in that realm are talking non-QM. A lot of changes to the non-QM world, as we've talked about ad infinitum on this show. We push that maybe a bit more than we do conventional. Because why? Because big banks, big box stores, they carry most of the conventionals because their depositors, the people that have wealth management with them, get the huge discount in rate in order to keep or maintain or originally the purchase or refinance with those people. So although we have access and do conventional loans all day long, most of our business, or at least 50% of it, is in the non-QM world, and that's bank statement loans, that's ITIN numbers, that's, what else is it? Yeah, business bank statement loans, business loans, those kind of things. So if you're in the market for any of those, plus conventional, always consider Malibu Funding. Malibu Funding's the company that sponsors this show, the company that I work for. Okay, let's get into the list. I got a whole bunch of them here, so let's see what we can get through in the short time that we have left in the show. Okay, 5 real estate trends that are happening right now. Mortgage rates likely will rise. That is true. Home prices get higher. That is true. Now, I said on last week's show or one of our Facebook or LinkedIn shows, we had in some cities in America last year a 23% rise in real estate prices. We're talking San Diego, Seattle. I don't know what the other city was, but it is astounding. Nationally, we had a 16.6% rise in home prices. That is going to continue. Number 3, the demand is still great. Yes, it is. Talked about this in an earlier segment. While the Fed continues to buy mortgage-backed securities and treasury bonds, that artificially holds interest rates down, which means that we have an overinflated market because there are just too many borrowers in the market, not enough houses. Supply and demand says prices will go up, demand is still great, and that's going to continue. Housing shortage will persist. Yes, it will. Until we get to a place where it's easier for large-scale builders to build, i.e., it's not a 20-year process to get approval on a 1,000-lot subdivision that you want to build in, you know, wherever it is in your city. So, consequently, there are smaller deals. 5, 10, 2, 3 individual, what they call infill deals. And that's not going to solve the housing crisis. Number 5, Fed to get pensive. Now, as we talked earlier about the Fed's tapering process, this is a conundrum. If the Fed continues to purchase at its current pace, and they've said they're going to do that for a while, I'm skeptical of that, but that's what they said. That means that more and more people are available to purchase houses, even though the prices are going up, because what we're talking about here is not the price of the house, but the price of the monthly mortgage. And as prices continue to drop, we're at, what did I say the rates were earlier in the show? I think a 30-year fixed rate loan is below 3% at 2.8, 2.85. As those rates continue to stay down, you get more and more people able to purchase. And that because the Fed is continually buying securities and treasuries, it's a problem. So they have to think about which is the best way to go. If they taper, there's less buyers in the market because the rates go up. But then again, the price house prices may come down. It's something to think about. Okay. In regards to rates and loans, how do you get the best rate or the lowest rate? Well, that's usually the best rate, okay? There's a four-part program here. Shop. I always say, look, if you're accepting the first person's offer in the door, you are not giving yourself a chance to have those two people or three people or five people compete for your business. You are somebody that they want. Believe me, they wouldn't be after you and wanting you to do business with them if they didn't make money on your loans. So shop around. Credit. Your credit is more important than you know to get the best rate. 750 FICO score and above will get you the best rate. You know, nationally, on the loans that we are doing nationally, you know that over 90% of the loans are over 700. That's unbelievable, 700 FICO score. It just goes to show you that even during the pandemic, what we have is a public that's paying their bills. Now, we have the Biden administration came out and they wanted to extend the renter's exemption probably for another 30 days. They want to get the infrastructure passed. They want to get some of the other economic indicators in before they start looking at ending that particular moratorium. Okay, let's see. Invest in the home. Okay, if you can show the lender that you've got 20% invested in your home. Now, one of the good things, if you're a homeowner right now and you're looking to refi, and I just told you that your house went up 16% last year, well, you've obviously got 20% in your house. So if you want to do a refi and get the best rate, you probably already qualify with that 20% in. Even if you have 30% in, yeah, you're more likely to get the better rate. And lastly, buy down the rate. If you have the ability to buy down your rate, what does that mean? They call them discount points. The discount points are, let's say it costs you 1 point. Your loan is $300,000. That means $3,000 to buy down your rate a quarter point, let's say, or whatever they're offering. And sometimes, if you can do that, the difference between really making a savings and just saving a little is $3,000, and that in a good market is another way to get a great rate. Okay, we're talking about population here because population really drives demand, right? I mean, if you have a lot of people looking at one thing, that's obviously going to make that thing more expensive. If you have a few people, not so. So population, what's happening worldwide, what's happening here in the U.S., is that it is declining. We may have this year in 2021 the first time in, I can't remember when, and I looked it up, the actual population in the U.S. will decline. People are having fewer kids. Millennials are weighing whether they should pay off their student loan or take on another responsibility in a son or a daughter. So if you're in that, I totally understand it. Now, one of the problems in that is that we have declining population, which means that some jobs are going unfulfilled. It's more than just the $300 a week that you're getting in unemployment that's causing people not to go back to work. It's the fact is that we're having less people to do these jobs. I'm going to mention five job categories that we can't fill right now. And some are obvious, right? The hotel, the server staff, those type of jobs. But think about this. Think about lawyers, firefighters, police officers, doctors, caregivers, pharmacy people, mental health people. All of these are jobs that can't fill the number of jobs as needed. Now, the U.S. has always been an immigrant country. Why? Predominantly because they fill the jobs that are needed by bringing people into the country. The country was founded like that, for gosh sakes. It's in the Constitution until they changed it. Anyway, I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. I really appreciate you listening, and we will see you next time.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.